Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Yes, we do. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune to help us make sense of it all. Eric?
Hello, Zorn.
Hi.
The greatest father that ever was born?
Yes, that's the lyric, oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't write the song,
right.
But I have to accept the verdict of the lyricist.
Don't you, though? I really do.
I do. I can't fight it. It's there.
At this time last week, remember way, way back to 7 days ago.
I was reassuring Wendy, as I recall.
I did.
Oh,
exactly.
You all have done that. Bill lied to me. Eric lied to me.
Yep.
Well, here's the thing I want. I want to come to the defense of the American media.
Okay.
And that is that, you know, when those of us who are looking at what this election is going to do, all we have to look at are the polls.
Right.
I don't say we ought to be out there going to Trump rallies and we would have picked something up that we didn't already know from the zillions of interviews and zillions of things that we read and saw about this election. We all knew that about 60 million people were going to vote for Donald Trump. That wasn't a mystery to anybody. Nobody said this was going to be a blowout on any side. So we relied on the polls. The polls said that Hillary Clinton was going to win. I think the average at the end was 3.5%, that she was going to win the popular vote by 3.5%. It ended up she won the popular vote by about, 1%, I think was the
right
latest
around
I
there,
see.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
Like that. So they were off by 2.5%, which is kind
margin of
what happened. I think it's actually a smaller error than it was in 2012. Now, in 2012, the difference was that the margin of error didn't change the result. It was like, well, okay, the result was different, but Barack Obama still won. So we were all patting ourselves on the back saying, why aren't we clever, ladies and gentlemen, for having predicted that election so well? We are at the mercy of these polls. Everybody is.
People polls saying, schmolls. People lied. People didn't want to admit they were voting for Donald Trump because they were shamed by family members.
Well, this is the lesson that we should have learned. We should have learned this. Every election seems like we should learn our lesson. In the year 2000, Al Gore was 3% up in the polls right before Election Day. And he ended up, of course, again, narrowly winning the popular vote, but losing the election. So, and every time we keep putting our hand on the hot stove of these polls and then going, and relying on them too much. And I've got to say, it wasn't just the media that did this. It was also the campaigns did it. You know, the Clinton campaign didn't go to Wisconsin, didn't go to Michigan,
didn't think they needed to.
They were relying on not only the main polls, but their internal polls. So, you know, the idea that, oh, we all should have been out there driving the roads of rural America and stopping by the VFW halls and talking to these people and rubbing shoulders with them, and then we would have seen what was happening here. You know, that's not the case. I mean, the case is that we just looked at these polls, and the polls were saying this, and so we said, this is what we think is going to happen. But nobody said it was a sure thing. People are really bagging on Nate
You
Silver,
did. The, Bill the, did.
I did.
You said it was a sure thing?
I thought it was a sure thing. I can't tell you in my life something that I thought was more of a sure thing.
Just trying to make Wendy feel better.
Oh, you were?
And you were not. You thought it was. And it's funny, Bill, because you were saying they're never wrong in Vegas. Their job
They've
is
never
to make
it
money.
Until last week.
I heard you say that on Friday when you were, you were doing your.
They've picked it. All right, so two indicators. Number one, Las Vegas had picked the winner every single time until last Tuesday. And then that guy we had on, that professor who.
He said Trump was going to win.
He said Trump was going to win.
And he didn't. He wasn't happy about it.
Right. But people blasted him like crazy, going, "You're the guy that's never wrong. You're going to be wrong this time." He was wrong.
He was right. So right. He was right. So well, I mean, the thing is that in college football on Saturday, Michigan lost to my alma mater. Michigan lost to Iowa by a point. They were ranked second in the country. It was a big, huge upset. Nobody saw it coming. You don't see the sports media rending their garments and beating themselves up for how did we miss this? How did we not see this coming? Why weren't we in the locker room talking to the defensive tackles? Hmm. Why didn't we see all the bumper stickers in the parking lot that told us that Iowa was a great team?
Well, because there's slightly more at stake in this particular.
But I'm saying that you make these projections based on the knowledge that you have.
Sure, sure.
And I'm not sure that there's a whole huge takeaway here. It's not like there was a overwhelming mandate for Trump. He won the Electoral College, which wins him the election, gives him the presidency. I mean, I'm not going to dispute that at all. I'm not going to say he didn't win. It didn't win fair and square. I did make the point in my Sunday column. I think it's important to make this point frequently, which is that, yes, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but they weren't playing for the popular vote. You know, and so that means that Clinton didn't campaign in Texas and Trump didn't campaign in California. And there were votes to be had in both places for those candidates had they gone to
because they knew the obvious is what the electoral represents to those two states is it's unwinnable if you're a Republican to win California and it's unwinnable if you're a Democrat to win Texas. You can't do it because of the way the electoral college is structured.
Right. So that if you replay this whole thing and say, what if they were just playing for the popular vote? The result would have been different. I don't know how different, but it would have been different. So it's not necessarily true that Hillary Clinton would be the president if we didn't have the Electoral College. I mean, it's a good talking point for people like me who are disappointed that Trump won. But it's not. I'm not sure that it means that the narrow majority of the public. I mean, basically, the takeaway from this is the country is very strongly divided.
And we have to come together. These protests have to stop. This hatred has to stop.
I don't think the protests have to stop. I think the protests.
But
the
what does that do? And I understand
aspect,
it.
The violence aspect has to stop.
Yes.
But the protests, I don't think, have to stop.
I just don't think the protests are all that wise right now because they don't have an ask. They're not like, what are they? They're just protesting. They're not protesting a specific action or policy. I do think that one value of them is that they are letting Trump know, letting his people know that there is a group of people who are mobilized, who are angry, who are ready to protest when he, like, say, starts a deportation force.
Right.
Or when he, yanks back Obamacare.
But that's a perfect time to protest. I just feel, everybody, like I said, Bill, I told you before, we have a microphone to say, I didn't vote for that guy. Other people should have a voice to be able to say, I don't support him. But he's the president-elect. I feel the protesting would mean more if you were looking. What are they looking to gain? That's what I guess I don't get.
Right. No, I agree with. I think that they. But it is a show of force right now,
and everybody has the right.
But I would like to see. First of all, I wish they had mobilized like this before the election. I wish that some of this energy that's out there right now had been out there a week ago, but it wasn't. And it may be telling Trump, I say to his people, that that they got to watch themselves because their hold on the public is not nearly what they said. If you saw 60 Minutes last night, Trump was saying, "Oh, I won rather easily. I won easily." He's convinced in his mind that he won this election going away.
Yeah.
His margin in the Electoral College reflects the margin in the country. No, the country is very split, and the country is very skeptical about him. Even the people who voted for him, a lot of them are not quite sure about him. They just preferred him over Hillary. They think that
they wanted to
want to shake things up, but they didn't even think he was qualified. Something like 60% of the voters thought that Trump was not qualified
right.
to be president.
He does not seem like he believes he's qualified from what I heard on 60 Minutes. Honestly, it's like, boy, this is way bigger than I anticipated. This is the real deal. This wasn't just a popularity contest.
He did seem really sober, didn't he, after
that
meeting with Obama when he comes out and he's like, he looked like, oh, boy.
Boy, I got a lot to do here.
I got a lot of homework to do here to catch up because he's got to hit the ground running. And I was not cheered by his selection of Bannon for his
Steve Bannon is
his strategist.
Yeah.
He's going to make him sort of co-equal with his chief of staff. And these are the two people who really have his ear in the White House. And Bannon, he was running that alt-right website Breitbart.
I know
before this, and that sent a signal. He's serious about a lot of the things that he said.
Right.
So the fact these protesters are out there just maybe sending a message, I do hope they restrain themselves and don't commit acts of violence. Another thing I want to bring up, since we're talking about protests, do we have time or should we break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break.
You had this look.
I'm worried about the time management. All right, so let's take a quick break and then more discussion on this and other topics. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune is joining us. We're talking about the events of the week, and it's been quite a week. The other thing to bring up about Trump and the aftermath of Trump is, and I'm not the first person to bring this up, is that the Supreme Court will be influenced by Donald Trump, not just in the near future, but for decades. There's one Supreme Court justice opening right now, but there's three more judges that are in their 80s. They'll be retiring fairly soon, so his appointments will shape the Supreme Court for decades to come.
I don't think Ruth Bader Ginsburg is ever going to retire.
You don't think she will?
And I think people have been sending her vitamin supplements all week. Yeah, you're right there. I think there are three of them who are right up around, right over 80 or right up close to 80. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is over.
In early 80s.
So, yeah, though it's definitely, he's going to have an appointment. He's going to take the seat that Merrick Garland should have had. And he's going to have his choice there, and we'll see. That's going to be a very early
Scott
signal.
Baio.
Scott Baio. Chachi.
You'll see.
Another thing that I wish that that Trump would do is give a speech and tell his supporters who are out there taking advantage of his victory as a license to express their bigotry and hatred and so on. And this has been going on. The Southern Poverty Law Center has a website, and they've kept track of hundreds of these incidents around the country in the last, you know, since the election, of, you know, students marching down the halls, kind of shouting "Build a wall" at Hispanic students and so on. It's the incident after incident of these things happening in Trump's name, and Trump responded to this on 60 Minutes last night. He said, "Oh, I hadn't heard about that. Well, they should stop it. They should stop it." He needs to give a speech. This is his first big test, I think, of leadership. He needs to get up and say, "Look, stop it." But he needs to say, "Look, this we campaigned. It was a rough campaign. Things were said, but this is not the America that we want to have now. We need to respect these people. He needs to clarify what he means."
Do you think he would mean it, or would those just be forced words from his staff saying, "Hey, this is your job to step up and let America know that this will not be tolerated"? But I don't know if he believes it.
I don't know if he believes it, but I do know that, I mean, I don't know what's in his heart, but I know that he has unleashed some ugly things that are in the hearts of other people. His campaign has done that. And he needs to address that, you know, for the good of the country and for, you know, the good of his administration. He needs to set that aside. People are really afraid. You know, it's all over you hear stories all the time about kids who are crying, kids who are, you know, African-American kids, Muslim kids, people who are afraid that this is, and Hispanic children also, afraid of what's going to happen to them. He needs to allay those fears to the extent that he can. He needs to make some statements. He needs to come forward and do this and be saying, "Well, why aren't the Democrats saying that people shouldn't be, you know, yelling terrible things about Melania?" Well, maybe they should, but he is now the president-elect. And he has got to take a stand on that. And I really wish that he would take some leadership in that area. It's one of the first tests of leadership for him is to make a statement like that and to really distance himself and to tell those people that he wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
You know, he'll answer a question about it, but he needs to, you know, it's not a tweet, it's a speech. So, yeah.
In the future, there was so much quote unquote dirt dug up about Donald Trump, and none of it mattered. Not a single bit of it mattered. So in the future, do we know that from now on, that whoever's running for president can have so many skeletons in their closet and it really won't faze the American public?
I think we do. I mean, I think that's a good point. I think there's a what we notice over and over again, that things would come up and people would say, "I don't care. I want change. I want the basic message." I think the bigger message from this campaign is that you can promise anything you want to the American people. You don't have to back it up with a plan. You are trying to persuade them with a vision that may even be an incoherent vision. I mean, the idea that he has that he's going to, you know, bring back the mining industry to West Virginia, that he's going to create these trade wars and that's going to help the working class in America, that he's going to cut everybody's taxes and increase infrastructure spending, and he's going to have a health care plan that costs less and has better care than Obamacare. All these things, it's all real easy to say, but that's what people want to hear. Hillary Clinton never articulated any kind of vision that was anything like that. You know, stronger together, and she had plans, and it seemed incremental. I frankly think they were far better, far more realistic. But realistic plans don't sell. The public wants a really broad vision, a really broad promise, and I think that's the lesson to take away here. Is the next time you run for president, Democrats, you're going to have to promise a lot, even if you're not going to deliver it, because what's going to happen is that he's not going to be able to deliver on all these promises. You're already seeing him backing away from the wall. You're seeing him backing away from repealing Obamacare.
He was asked, you know, there were talks about maybe a fence. Well, in some parts, a fence might be okay, but we're still going to need a wall.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, that's the depressing takeaway here, is that so many voters fell for what I believe was a con game.
Right.
And so I guess the lesson is, you got to play a con game. To beat a con man, you got to play a con game. And that's depressing.
But what about the things he promised his supporters that he may not deliver? Is there going to be a revolt there then, too?
He will blame Obama. He'll blame...
How?
I don't know.
And the Republican House and Senate, it's like there's no blame to go around anymore.
The Bush White House blamed Clinton for 9/11. I mean, you can figure out ways. He was able to... He never accepted responsibility for anything. Never apologized for anything. This is Trump now. I don't see him saying, "Well, gee, I was wrong about that," or, "Gee, I'm sorry I broke that promise." I don't think that his supporters are willing yet to turn on him. We'll see what happens because it's a fragile coalition that he built. He's got a lot of people who voted for Obama who then, or at least the counties anyway, where he won. He won a lot of counties that Obama had won
in
2008, 2012. So it's not like he's got these people forever.
Right.
So Wendy may be right. These people are going to say, hey, you know, I fell for a bill of goods
once
4 years ago, but I'm not going to fall for it again.
Go back to the taxes for just a little bit, because he was adamant throughout the debates especially that Hillary Clinton was the woman whose plan was to raise taxes, him just the opposite, he's going to lower taxes. But then minutes later, he would talk about the infrastructure of the country and how we're going to fix the roadways and fix the bridges and make the airports better than they've ever been and increase the police presence and on and on and on and on. And why didn't anybody say to him, but it's tax money that pays for all that, and if you're lowering taxes, where's that money coming from?
Well, this is part of the idea that if you lower all these taxes, what happens is people end up making so much more money.
They spend
it. I mean, this is the trickle-down idea, which is it's never worked, but they keep hanging on to it, which is if we cut everybody's taxes, then it creates this huge surge in the economy, and actually tax revenues go up. This is the conservative think tank idea that's been around forever. Never seems to work. They're trying it right now in Kansas,
yeah,
and it's been a disaster.
Yeah,
and so you know that's his answer to this, which is like, well, yes, I'll cut everybody's taxes, but then there'll be such a big boom that we're gonna see a net increase in revenue. We can spend it on the wall,
right,
on infrastructure and other plans. So, you know, it's frustrating because it's very difficult to argue with that, and it's so appealing. Like, hey, you'll cut my taxes. And we'll be able to have more services.
Right.
That's what people want. But it's
impossible.
It's impossible. So.
He's putting together a staff. He told us during the election he's going to get the best people. Wouldn't name any names, but he will find the best people. Some people he said that we've never even heard of. That's how good they are. So far, it's been all Republicans, obviously. But he's got to have a couple of token Democrats. He's got to. Who will they be? Do we have any idea?
I don't know. I mean, we're so polarized. They're so distant. They're not those kind of Democrats in the middle President Obama picked Ray LaHood,
yeah,
from Illinois,
yeah,
to be his, I think it was transportation secretary. There aren't people you can, and I think he picked Cohen, didn't he, or was to be defense secretary at one point. I forget who did that. But there is that bipartisan, the sort of little bit of team of rivals thing that happens where you want some people from the other party in your cabinet.
Yeah.
And actually James Comey, the FBI director, was a Republican that Obama appointed.
Right.
You know, and now Trump would not say during
if
the interview
he's staying
whether,
or not.
Whether he's going to ask for his resignation. I don't know that he can make him quit, but he might ask for his resignation. So,
yeah.
So I think it is important. We'll see.
Would he ask for Comey's resignation, though? In a weird side note to all this, Comey helped him.
Well, Hillary Clinton was saying that not only was that letter that came out 9 days before the election,
yeah,
that helped. Because the letter came out and said, "I'm looking at Anthony Weiner's email. There might be some stuff in there that affects Hillary." And then the Sunday before the election, he says, "Well, never mind.
She's clear."
And her theory is that the one 9 days before had a lot of people come out and vote for Trump, and then the one 3 days before energized Trump supporters.
Yeah, right.
They thought, "Oh my gosh, the FBI really is on her side. We've got to get out and support."
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I think there's more problems with her campaign than that. But
that's Eric Zorin. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.